Well, good morning, everybody. Place kind of thins out when all the kids leave, which is actually kind of a cool thing, in my opinion. I like that we have such a high number of kids in this church. I think that points to a pretty bright future. So, listen, my name is James Smith. Just in case you don't know who I am, I'm one of the pastors here. And we have been in this series that we're working on finishing up now called 10 Things About Us. And in case you're recent to church, or if it's been a little while since we did it, 10 Things About Us is a list of statements that we want to become truer and truer about us as a church going forward. And so today we're working on number 8. We've got 2 more to go. And in case you're curious about some of the ones that you've missed, maybe you've missed a few Sundays or this is your first Sunday, you can always go online, go on church.ffwatertown.com and listen to our old sermons there. Or in case you're a little more advanced, you can put our app on your phone and then you have Mike's voice and my voice with you at all times. I mean, you can listen to it in bed. You can, you know, if you're a little bit unsettled at the end of the day, you can just listen to Mike's voice and it'll kind of soothe you to sleep. That's always there. Just search your app store, Faith Fellowship Watertown, and it should pull up in any store that you have there. So anyway, without further ado, this morning is number 8 statement, and it is this. I'm just going to throw it out there. We enjoy serving together. We enjoy serving together. Now, what is joy? What is enjoyment? It's like aggressive happiness, right? It's like advanced contentment. It's like a uber peace, right? We actually really like doing what we do together as a church family. Now, some of you are thinking, well, yeah, okay, that's cool, I guess, but why is that? Why does that make number 8? I mean, did you guys just need filler? Like, it sounds kind of frivolous, doesn't it? Enjoyment, doesn't it sound kind of like, you could do without that, really? But listen to me for a second. Hold that thought. Some of you here, I think this is reality, some of you here are actually at this church today because the last church that you were at, wherever that was, this was not true. This was not true. There was something ill about the culture. You felt like it was a little bit toxic. Some days you felt like it was downright drudgery to show up to church and do whatever it is that you signed on for. Some days you felt like your volunteering was like a contract that you signed a long time ago, and you feel like you're just kind of walking it out, and maybe someday your time will be up, and then you can walk away from this thing. For a lot of people in a lot of places, this is not true of the church life. Now, some of you here are actually thinking, I've never really been involved in a church that way. But some of you, it's not that you used to be part of a church, it's that you've never really wanted to be part of a church. And the reason is, you got a close-up of some real live actual church people, and they were miserable. They were not content people. They were not peaceful people. They were angry at the world, maybe. They seemed like they resented everybody. They didn't live just like the way they did. They seemed kind of uptight and wound up, and you felt like you had to walk around them on eggshells all the time because just the slightest little thing might set them off, and they're going to be mad at you, and they're going to be mad at the world, and they're going to be mad at everybody. Some of you have had that experience with real life, actual church people, and something in you says, you know what? If these people have supposedly found the secret to happiness, I'm not sure it is what they think that it is, because they're not happy. They're never satisfied. They're anxious all the time. They're just as unhappy as anybody else, except their schedules are busier. So why do I want any of that? But there is a larger group of people, and I think there are a group of these people in every church, everywhere, in every place. We're no different. And it's you especially I want to talk to today. There is a group of people who are believers of Jesus, and they're doing a lot of the right things. You know, they're involved, they give, they serve, they invite, they take part, they read on their own time and try to, you know, better their understanding, and they pray and those kinds of things. They do a lot of the right things, but at the end of the day, they have this subtle, gnawing feeling that they're not quite as content as they ought to be. They don't have the peace that supposedly they're supposed to have. They've developed this conviction. They've been in church enough times, enough years, to think to themselves, I'm supposed to be a very thankful person. I'm supposed to be a very settled person. I should be the least anxious person I know. And yet, I cannot get over the fact that I'm always a little bit wound up inside. Something isn't quite right. And sometimes you might even question, am I even really a Christian? I mean, I'm not supposed to be anxious inside all the time. Am I? I mean, it says you don't have to be anxious. Jesus says that outright. Don't be anxious. It didn't even say you're not supposed to be anxious. It just says don't do it. Don't be anxious. And yet here I am all kind of wound up like a clock inside all the time. And I come and I do the right things, but for whatever reason, the right things don't seem to give me the sense of pleasure and satisfaction that supposedly they should. And it's you especially I want to speak to this morning. Now, some of you are just fine. At least I hope some of you are just fine. And you've found the secret. You're very content people. You're very happy. You're very thankful. And it's boiling out of you. But sometimes it's not always the case, is it? And it's you I want to speak to. And what I want to tell you especially this morning, and this is why we put this up here for a hope for our church, is that it doesn't have to be that way. We actually believe that it does not have to be that way. It's not supposed to be that way. It wasn't designed to be that way. I want to give you a little bit of justice. If any of you rang true with any of those things I said about different kinds of people, I want to give you a little bit of indication. You were right to be suspicious. You were absolutely correct in your suspicion about those church people that are always unhappy, and about yourself especially. If you look at yourself and say, I am not ever happy, I'm not ever satisfied, what's wrong with me? And this is why we think that. Look at something that Jesus says. This is from John 16, 22, if you're following along somehow, a device or an actual paper Bible. This is Jesus, and he's speaking to a little group, his little group of disciples. And it's on the night that he is going to be picked up and taken away and beaten and eventually killed in a horrific way. He's looking up the barrel of the gun when he makes this statement. He says this. He says, now is your time of grief, but I will see you again, and you will rejoice, and no one will take away your joy. Now think about that for a moment. He's saying, boys, look, right now, you are about to be very, very sad. You are about to be very, very unhappy. And there's good reason for it, because you're about to witness something terribly painful. It's going to be terribly painful for me. It's going to be terribly shocking and painful for you. But listen, there is an end to it. There is an end to it. And when the end has come, you and I will be looking face to face again. And you will have joy again, even though you may not think it's possible through all that you're about to go through, that all I'm about to go through, you may never think it's possible again by the time this really gets going. He said, but not only is it possible, but you're going to have a kind of joy that nobody can do anything to take it from you. Nothing. It's going to be beyond anything anybody can do. It's going to be beyond anything any circumstance can make you feel or make you think or make happen to you. It's going to be beyond all of those things. It's a happiness and a peace and a contentment that is going to be beyond anything the world can throw at you. It's bulletproof. And that's what you're going to have. So my question, maybe this is your question too. If that's what Jesus said the church was going to be like after he came back and cut us loose and gave us a mission, what happened between then and now for so many people? Was he wrong? Does joy just kind of wear off after a while? I mean, maybe they can't take it from you, but maybe, you know, you get it, and then it just kind of, you know, you use it up like a battery on your cell phone, and you can't recharge it or something. What is going on? Why are there so many miserable Christians? Miserable, some of them. Just angry at everything. The government's not going the way I want. Oh, my gosh, pull my hair out. You know, the community didn't elect the leader I need. Pull my hair out. This is terrible. What's going to happen? What are we going to do? Chicken Little all the way. What is going to happen if I don't get my way about this thing? What is going to happen? So much anxiety, so much unrest, so much displeasure. Or maybe it's more personal than that. Maybe you wonder, what is wrong with me? Why am I so restless inside? Why am I so anxious all the time? Why am I so unsettled? Why am I not happy? Shouldn't I be happy? Why can't I be happy? I follow Jesus. It's really cool. I should be happy. Why not? And what I want to do today is offer one possible explanation for you. Now, I understand that there is a group of people, there's always a group of people that are experiencing some extreme grief or some extreme pain from some actual trauma that is going on in their lives right now. I just want to say this is not about that, okay? So I don't want you to go thinking I'm being critical of you for something terrible that's happened to you right now. I'm not doing that, okay? I just want to put that out there. But I want to offer one possible explanation to you about how church people can be so unhappy and so restless inside, even though they have the hope of all hopes to look forward to. I mean, if they really, even if you're not a Christian, you would have to admit that if you did believe that you had an eternal glory to look forward to and a forever with the one who made you and a perfected relationship, and you would have complete understanding of all the things that you never understood, you would have to be happy, right? You'd have something there. Even if you don't believe that yourself, you'd have to admit you should be happy, right? Wow. Right? But listen, not always the case, is it? So what I want to do is offer a potential explanation. And this doesn't come from me. This actually comes from Jesus' brother, James, his actual, literal family brother. Okay? And his brother actually came to believe that Jesus really was who he said he was, the sent Son of God, and that he had been given power and given a mission, and we're supposed to carry it forth. And so his brother is writing to a young church, and the church, go figures, experiencing some problems. See, it didn't take thousands of years for unrest and unhappiness and unsettledness to creep into the church, okay? It just probably took a few days, actually. And so we have proof of that here. And James writes this, and you may not easily see how this applies to you at first, but just hold on. I'm telling you, it will, okay? And this is what James says. He asks this question: what causes fights and quarrels among you? What causes quarrels and fights among you? Apparently, they had some outright disputes going on in the church. Okay, now maybe you don't have an outright dispute. Like I said, just hold on to that because it gets better. He asks this then: don't they come from your desires that battle within you? Don't they come from something else? Do people fight because they disagree, or is it something else? And I think what James is saying here, newsflash, boys, people don't fight because they disagree. They fight because they're not content. They fight when they're unhappy. They fight when they're anxious. They fight when there's something amiss inside of them and it causes them to feel threatened. Something isn't right and I got to protect it. Something might take something that I love. There's something going on. There's something that I want and I'm not sure if I'm going to get it. And he goes on to say this, excuse me, you want something but don't get it. So he just states it very, very plainly. There's something that you want that you don't have. There's something you don't want, you haven't got it. And he says this, sounds extreme, you kill and covet. Gosh, I hope the killing was an exaggeration. Don't you? I mean, what if you came to the church one day and Pastor Mike was standing over my slain body? I mean, wouldn't that bother you a little bit? You know, it'd be hard to kind of recover from that. He says, you kill and covet. In other words, you desire it so badly, you're willing to do just about anything to get the thing that you want. And he says, but you cannot have what you want. So you have someone that is trying very hard to attain whatever it is they want, a circumstance, a solution, a situation, a life, whatever it is, you've got something that wants very badly and is willing to do what it takes to get it. They're so fixated on getting that thing for themselves. He says, you get a desire for something you don't have, you do whatever it takes, and you can't have it. And so what happens? He says, you boil up inside. You get quarrelsome. Quarrelsome? Quarrelsome. You probably don't even know what quarrel is, some of you. A quarrel is like a feuding resentment between two people that really ought to be getting along. Normally, under circumstances, these people would get along. They should get along, but they're not. and they're having some kind of altercation, a back and forth. And he says, when people don't get what they want, you may actually end up quarreling and fighting. Can anybody here relate to that? I mean, have you? Of course you can. Of course you can. Everybody has wanted something at some point, right? Something that you haven't got already. And when you want something you haven't got already, what happens? You start to set your hopes on it, right? You start to point your life toward getting that thing. You might have an idea about a certain income that you wish you had, or a reputation at work, or a dynamic at your home, or you just wish the meals were better all the time. Or maybe you want a car that doesn't need to be fixed constantly. Maybe you would like a house that doesn't seem like it's falling down all the time. Or maybe you would really like to be able to eat whatever it is you want without having somebody breathe down your neck, say, you can't eat that, it's so bad for you. You know, it doesn't really matter. We've all had some kind of an opportunity or a way that we wish things were that we haven't got and then wanted it. And the reason that we want it is because why? Because it will bring us some joy. We think whatever it is that we don't have, if we just had it, it would bring us a little happiness. It might, right? It might, if things were a little better at work, if you had a nicer car, if you had a nicer job, if you had a nicer husband, if you had a nicer anything, you know, it would just bring us a little sense of happiness. It might be temporary, but you're looking forward to that little rise you're going to get when you finally attain that thing. So we get our heads set on it, but here's the problem. There's uncertainty about whether we're going to get it. Until we get it, there's uncertainty. And this little thing happens. And I'll tell you a story in a second to try and describe it. But this thing happens where you're doing okay mostly. You set your heart on a thing that you would like to add to your life. And you become so fixated on it, and you become less and less content as it becomes more uncertain whether or not you're going to get it, that you actually start to believe that if you don't get the thing that you want, you're not going to have any joy at all in your life. You start out thinking, here's something I would like for my life. It would give me a little bit of joy. And you start pointing your life toward it and working toward it and moving toward it and trying to get other people to help you get it. And you start to actually believe that if I don't get that thing, I won't have any joy. I won't have any joy. If you don't believe that, just ask a two-year-old. I have a two-year-old in my life, okay? Wakes me up at like 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. You know what he wants? He wants milk, okay? He just wants milk. Very simple thing. We buy milk at the store. We have it for him, so it's really okay. You go downstairs. You put it in a sippy cup. You bring it up. He's got it. He's content. He's at peace. He's not crying, not doing anything. Well, one day I thought I'd be fun, okay? I'm a fun guy, right? Yeah. I thought it'd be fun. So I was spending a Saturday with him. He was out doing errands. We were having fun and going into stores. And I like taking him into stores. It's fun. You know, he's cute. Everybody thinks he's cute. You know, that's cool. So I bought some chocolate milk. Now, he has never had chocolate milk before. Never. I mean, and think about this. Those of you who know about chocolate milk, just imagine if you could go back in time for a moment to the day that you had never had chocolate milk and suddenly you could have chocolate milk. Woo! You know, it's a big deal. So I mixed some into his milk, you know, a little half and half, so not so much sugar. Hey, don't judge me. Don't judge me. So put the chocolate milk in his cup. I just want to see him be like, ah, chocolate milk. So big mistake, right? Big mistake. So the next day, he wakes up in the morning at 5, 6, whenever it is, and he looks at me and he goes, milk? I go, yeah, I'll go get you some milk. And I go get the milk and I bring it back. And he goes, chocolate milk. I look at him, I go, well, listen. Listen, less than two-year-old. Come, let us reason together. Okay. Chocolate milk is nice. And it's for special occasions, okay? We get the chocolate milk out when people get married, and you know, we don't just open up a bottle and throw it all around the house, right? Chocolate milk is not for all the time, okay, so we're going to, you know, you can have milk. And he goes, chuck it, milk. Chuck it, milk. I'm like, well, okay, hold on. Just back up for a second. What do we do? Now, he loves apple juice. In fact, he prefers apple juice to milk. I'm like, listen, buddy, I'm not going to get you chocolate milk. I'm not going to get you chocolate milk right now. I'll get you some apple juice. He's like, nah. So I'm like, all right, it's going to be all right. I go downstairs. I get the apple juice in the sippy cup, the one that doesn't leak, hopefully. And I get upstairs, and I go, here's apple juice. And he's like, chocolate milk. And then he body slams the sippy cup. Boom! And I'm like, no. No. Chocolate milk. And then he scrunches his face up like this. Like that. And I kid you not, for the next 10 minutes. Now keep in mind, this kid has got a lot going for him. Okay? He's going to go to the pool that day. Loves the pool. Splishy splash. Lots of fun. He's going to go outside. He's going to see trees. He loves trees. He's going to go play in the yard. We're going to play ball. He's going to do all kinds of things. For the next 10 minutes, he was absolutely convinced that he could never again know joy in his life unless he got the chocolate milk that he wanted now. Does that ring true for anybody? Isn't that us just grown up? We have something we set our sights on. We may have experienced it before. We may never have had it. And we become convinced in our minds we should have this thing. And we're never really quite right inside knowing there's something we want that we haven't got. Never really quite okay. Can't really quite breathe easy. And we start to say things to ourselves like this. If I could just get to such and such a place, or if I could just get to such and such an experience, or if I just had such and such a person in my life, could be a person or a relationship that you wish that you had. If I could just get to such and such, I could finally rest and then I could move on and I would be okay. I'd be serving the Lord. I'd be doing all these things. If I could just get to this thing, if I don't ever have fill in the blank, I don't know what I'm going to do. Or if I ever lost this, or if I ever lost this situation, if I never experienced this, I don't really know if life could ever be worth living because I'm so fixated on it and the joy and the happiness that it might bring me. I don't know I could ever recover. And just, I want to say to you, listen. If you are dependent on that thing as the source of your joy, you should be upset. You should be anxious. You should be concerned because all that stuff is very uncertain. It can be taken from you. It's risky. It's dangerous to rely on those things as the source of the joy that you need. And we all need it. We all need some happiness. We all need to feel like life is worth living. But if you are dependent on that thing or that person or that opportunity or that situation or that income or that dynamic or that lifestyle, you're really at risk because those things are uncertain. Those things are not bulletproof like the joy that Jesus was talking about. Those things are circumstance dependent. Not like his joy. His joy was not circumstance dependent. He said there's nothing anybody can do to take that joy from you. But we're at risk when we start to set our hearts on certain things as being the source of the joy that we need to experience in order to feel like life's worth living again. Or even to stay feeling like life's worth living. Chocolate milk. Now, here's the natural question of every human being I've ever met. And you start asking it as a child right away. There's something you want. You don't have it. You try to get it, but you can't. What do you ask? Why? Why can't I have what I want? It would be so much easier. And you start to, you know, you become what I call a sort of a Christian terrorist, okay? And you don't know what that means yet, but what does a terrorist do? A terrorist is somebody that says, I want what I want, and until you give me what I want, I'm going to take your joy, okay? Until I get the joy I want, I'm going to take yours. And so we become kind of Christian terrorists with our parents or maybe just terrorists in general. We say, you know, I want what I want, and I want to know why I can't have it. And until you give me a good explanation, I'm just going to argue with you and try and manipulate you and see if I can't get you to give me what I want because then I'll leave you alone. And so sometimes we do that. And sometimes we do that with God. Whether we know it or not, subtly we may do this. We say, God, I want what I want. And, you know, as soon as that thing arrives, then I will move on and do some of the things. But until then, I don't know that I can pay attention to you right now. Not a good deal. I'll tell you the same thing that I tell kids. I don't negotiate with terrorists. Well, God doesn't negotiate with terrorists either. Okay, so that strategy is probably a waste of your time. But, listen. James has an answer for why can't we have what we want? Why can't we have what I want? It would be so much easier if you just give it to me, then I'd be happy, then we can move on. But sometimes you don't. And this is what James says. He says, two possible solutions for all of you. He says, you do not have because you do not ask. You do not have because you do not ask God. That's one possible solution. Do any of you remember being a kid and there was something you wanted and you tried real hard? Maybe it was the cookies in the cookie jar or something like that, and so you developed some elaborate, you know, scaffolding to get up on the counter. Maybe you slipped and skinned your knee or something, you hurt yourself, you start to get frustrated, you can't get to the thing, and a parent comes along and says, why don't you just ask? Did it occur to you that you should just ask? He says, some of you have a frustration coming from wanting something that you're just too proud to ask God for. It's like you feel like you should just deserve it. Instead of looking at God as someone who is someone to do you a favor and provide you things as a favor to you, as something he chooses to do because he can, you think, oh, I should just have that, so there's no need to ask. I'll just go and try and get it myself. He said, some of you have a frustration that comes from wanting something, and it's just because you're not asking. Could be a very good thing. Could be a great thing. Nothing particularly sinful or evil. You're just not asking. Why don't you ask? He asks that you ask him. Here's another possible solution. He says, when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives. Interesting. You ask with wrong motives that you may spend what you get on your own pleasure. That doesn't sound very good. I'd be embarrassed to admit that was me. Sometimes we want things for the wrong reason. They're okay things, but the reason is wrong. And even though we ask him, God has decided he's not going to support you getting something for the wrong reason at times. That's interesting. And he says many times the wrong motive is that you may spend what you get on your own pleasure. In other words, it's all about you. In other words, a red flag should go off in your mind if the thing that you don't have but want is really pretty purely so that it will make you feel good. That should be a red flag right there. That maybe your reasons or your motives aren't quite what they ought to be, and that maybe you should go back and recheck some things. And we'll talk about that in just a second. There are some questions I'm going to offer to you that you can ask yourself that might be earthquake shattering, I don't know. They have been for me. He says, you ask with wrong motives that you may spend what you get on your own pleasure. Isn't it true that sometimes what feels good is not necessarily good for you? Is that true? Nod your head if you think that's true. Sometimes what feels good is not necessarily for your good. Huh? Yeah. Now, we like to think we're adults. We grew out of that. We don't have to go back to that anymore. You know, that was an embarrassing, you know, thing that we had to live through, realizing that that was true when we were kids, because our parents were like, no, not good for you. Can't have it. I'm like, ah. But listen, it's true. It's true. And there can be a big difference between something feeling good and being good for building you up to become more like the image of Jesus. So you have to come back to that. You have to remember that God's big idea here is to take the lives of everyday, normal, average human people, just like us, and transform us, like little caterpillars turning into a beautiful butterfly, to become more like the image of Jesus Christ himself. And sometimes there will be things that we know would feel good. We know that we would like a situation, an opportunity, a lifestyle, an income, a person brought into our life. But if we want those things for the wrong reason, it may not actually be good for building us up into the image of Christ. It may actually work in the other direction. Now, if you doubt that, think about this for a second. Have you ever met somebody that appeared to be used to getting what they wanted pretty much all the time? Ever met somebody like that? Just raise your hand. If they're sitting next to you, don't raise your hand. But if you met somebody like that, okay, so you've met somebody that's used to getting what they want, or they at least seem like it. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that helped them become more like Jesus or less like Jesus? Did that make them a more loving person? Did that help them be more sensitive to the needs of people around them? Did that help them in that way? No, it did not. Let me ask another question. If you had all the money that you wish that you had, or the income that you wish that you had, and all the resulting opportunities that you would have as a result of having the income that you've always wished that you had, here's a few questions. Would you be more or less likely to serve Jesus? Would you be more or less likely to be looking out for people constantly, to be looking for God to use you, to make an impact in people's lives for the better? I mean, would you be doing more of that or less of that? No, the logical answer to that for most of us is, if I had more money, I could do so much more. But is that really true? If you had more, Would you use it for other people, or would you just spend it on yourself more? Would you become more self-centered, self-centric? I'm not sure any of us really knows the answer to that question, but I can tell you for sure there are many, many people who I have met that it was a danger for them to have access to a lot of money. It actually was a risk. It was bad. It could have been gambling or an addiction or something that got built up in their life, because there are some opportunities that wealth and money bring to us that we can't actually handle the temptation of. It may actually be a grace of God for us to have less than we wish that we had. Let me ask this. If things always went the way that you would have them go in your perfect world, the government elected the right leaders, made the right policies, the right rules and regulations were in place in your community, the perfect ones, if nobody ever bothered you, nobody ever took anything from you, nobody ever threatened you with anything, if you never had to have the burden of going out to earn a living or you never had to work too hard to make the right friends that you enjoy and have the activities, and if you were just born to be a great basketball player or something that you wish that you were, if you had things the way that you wanted them in your perfect world, would you be more likely to depend on God and build up a trust relationship or less? Would you be likely to forget how much you actually need from Him, and that everything, every good thing in your life is a grace and a favor done for you? Or would you just kind of, I think I kind of got this on my own right now. I don't really see a lot of need for God in my life right now. Probably has something to do with why Jesus said it would be harder for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven than for a camel to enter through the eye of a needle. Or more likely, actually, for the camel to get through the needle. Sometimes there are things that we could have that would tempt us to rely on God less, that would tempt us to trust Him less over time as those things developed, that would pull us in a direction away from building people up around us. Sometimes there are things that we could have that immediately are a problem for the people around us. One time when I was a kid, here's some imperfect parenting, and it's not me, it's my dad, okay? I was at the store with my dad, and I'd been helping him, and I think it was OD Greens or someplace, and I saw a candy bar, and I was like, I'd like a candy bar. Can we get a candy bar? And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I like the Almond Joys, right? I got the nut, mounds don't. But anyway, I like the Almond Joys, and it was like the 4-pack. And I really like Almond Joys. My brother did too. Okay, my brother likes them too. My brother wasn't there. My dad just, he was busy. He was carrying lumber and stuff. He wasn't thinking. So I get that Almond Joy home, and my motives were not entirely good. And so I got home from helping Dad, and I was kind of proud of myself. And I sit down. It was kind of like this. I sat down on my Almond Joy and very carefully unwrapped it. At the table, in full sight, this might be slightly exaggerated, so I warn you. I get out a dinner plate. I put my four Almond Joys, you know, centered very attractively on the plate. I get my napkin, you know, I put that in my shirt, put it down like this. And I get out my fork and my knife. You know, I slice it in just the right places, put the fork in. Very good. That's good. You know, I carried on about, boy, that's a really good Almond Joy. Man, oh, the coconut is just right, and the vanilla, the flavors, the aroma. You know, my brother, what's my brother doing? He's sitting there like, argh. You know, he's like 4 years younger. Argh. It was not good for me to have that. Even though there's nothing wrong with eating a candy bar, my motive was not good. If my dad had known anything about it, he probably would have stopped me. Should have stopped me, okay? But, you know, forgiveness for all parents. We don't make all the right decisions all the time. So listen. Let me ask you a question. Another one. Is it possible that some of the discontentment in your life, if you have some, any at all, is due to one of these two things? Either you've wanted it for a long time and it just hasn't occurred to you that it's, you don't really earn it or deserve it, but it would be a favor from God if you got it and you should ask Him. Is it possible that that could be a solution for some of the discontentment in your life? Is it possible? The other question is, is it possible that maybe, just maybe, somewhere in your motives for the things that you want, not all quite spot on with the Jesus plan? Now, sometimes we have motives that, you know, on the outside, you know, it'd be good if I had this because I could do this and because I could do this. But really, about 98.8% of it is built around this other thing that you kind of keep under the clouds and say, well, I would really enjoy it too because of this. Is it possible? Is it possible that some of the motive for the things that you want that you haven't got are maybe tainted a little bit or clouded a little bit, and that you should go back and re-examine what it is you want and why? And so, think about that for a moment. I have developed a list of three questions, and I'll have them up here in just a second. A list of three questions. It starts with this one. What do I want in life that seems to be up in the air? Isn't that a good place to start? What do I want in my life that seems to be kind of up in the air? I'm not sure if it's going to pan out the way I hope. Start there. Just identify what it is. Sometimes it's hard to do that. Sometimes it's work to do that. We just know I'm not happy about anything. You come into church or you come into home or you come into work and just like, Do the work for a moment of identifying the things that you wish were different. And then ask this question: what is my real motive for wanting it? That can be hard to confront. But what is my real motive for wanting this? Will it really be good for my heart? Will it really be good for my relationship with God and growing it? Will it really be good for helping me build up the people around me? Is it all about just me and the pleasure that I think I will get and the happiness and the joy? Or is it just chocolate milk? Is it chocolate milk for my soul? And lastly, if it passes those tests, if you can identify what it is, and you think actually the motive might be decent, well, are you asking God for it? And do you persevere in that? Do you trust Him enough to keep asking even though He didn't give it to you just like that the first time? Or did you just kind of fall off the wagon? Well, I asked him, he didn't give it to me, so. Am I asking God for it? You shouldn't expect to receive what you don't ask for from God. And there are very precious few things that we've actually earned or deserved according to Christ. It's all a grace of God. It's all up to Him, and we should honor that and respect that and recognize that by asking Him for the things that we want. I think those are three questions that could possibly transform the culture of any church. If we all stepped back and said, we need to consistently examine what it is that causes our discontent when it comes up. What is it that causes discontent? Is it that I just want something and I'm too proud to ask for it and I'm expecting it, but nobody seems to be giving it to me? Is it because I want something and I've asked God for it and He doesn't seem to be supporting me in it and I'm just kind of tore up inside about that and confused and going a little crazy? What is going on with me and my desires? And I think that if we do that as a matter of discipline for our hearts, just as church-going people, just as Christian believers, there is a version of our lives that can become available to us where we do not have to live constantly in anxiety, constantly with just this restless sense that something isn't right, constantly under this weight that we should achieve something for ourselves or we're a failure. We would love to be free of that. There is a version of our life, I believe, that is possible that you may not be experiencing and I may not be experiencing right now, but it could be if we would just be willing to humble ourselves and ask these questions. Because when you ask those questions, there's power in the answer. There's power in the answer. When you, for one, just identify what it is in the first place that really has you upset, that's power. At least you can kind of stop yourself when you're in a situation, you're kind of grumpy and you're kind of, and your attitude's poor. At least you can stop yourself a little bit from that overflowing into the other relationships you have in your life. But even more powerful is to ask, what really is my motive for the thing that I desire? Is it good for me? Is it good in the eyes of God? Is it good to build others up around me? Or is it just chocolate milk for my life? Feel good today, but I'll need it again tomorrow. I'll need something else the next day. And then, what could really unleash some change in your life is if all of those things kind of pan out and you say, you know, I have a desire. It's actually a good desire. There's quality in this desire. There's love for others and not just myself in this desire. To ask God for it again and again and again until you receive that thing. But because Jesus did say that whatever you ask in my name, you will receive. And what that means is whatever you ask that's on my behalf, on the behalf of my mission, on the behalf of my cause, on the behalf of the plan that I have for the people around you, whatever you ask as an extension of your relationship with me and how much you care about this mission of the kingdom going forward, you will receive it. There's a lot of power there. There are a lot of experiences that churches all over the country could be having that they're not currently having now. If we would just humble ourselves and say, God, it's up to you. It's up to you whether this thing happens or not. And I know with confidence I can come to you and ask for it. And I don't have to have anxiety after that because I know you heard me. And I know if it's any good at all, you'll make it come to pass. And God, remind me to pray again so that I can remind myself how good you are and that I can trust you and that I should keep asking. Just remind me, God. Because you said that. Jesus Christ Himself said that. I also want to say this to any of you out there that this might apply to. Some of you, like I said, have come to see a Christianity or experience from Christians that Christians are just miserable people. Just angry at everybody, and they're upset that the world isn't the way they want it to be, and why don't you behave like us? You know, what do they do? Well, go to hell. You're going to hell if you don't become like us. You're in trouble. You know, man, that's an ugly side of a Christianity I don't want anything to do with. But let me ask you, first, I apologize if that's ever been your experience, but what if there is a version of a church and a version of a Christianity that is nothing like that? What if there is a version of a Christianity where people are real about themselves, real about their desires? They don't pretend they don't have them, but they say, you know what, I have desires. Sometimes they're not always right, and I have to weed through that process. And in that, you know, my heart is humbled a little bit, and I am freed to actually experience the joy that comes with knowing that I have an eternal future with God and that death is not the end. What if there was a version of church like that? What if there was a version of church where people were really, really happy to actually be doing what they're doing together? Now, some of you say, well, I kind of feel like that's what we have. You know what? You're right. You're right. And so I invite you to join us in that. If you're just kind of on the sidelines and wondering, oh, what do I do? You know, is there really a church like that? I invite you to stick with us and find out what that's like, because there are people that come here every single week. There are people that serve in their homes every single week. There are people on individual little missions, little things they do because they believe God called them to make a difference. And I'm telling you, I've never met so many happy people to be working together in my entire life. Just watch the music team up here sometime practicing before church starts, or watch the green shirts in the hallway, or watch kids' church volunteers. I don't think you'll find anybody that's not happy to be there. Now, is that always been true for all time? I don't know about that, but I know that right now we are experiencing a lot of peace and a lot of aggressive contentment about doing what we do together. We enjoy serving together. But the reason that we make this a statement is because we are humans, and that could change any moment, any day. And so we want to make sure that we maintain that. We want to build it up stronger in the future, because the church should be the most attractive place on the face of the planet if people are looking for peace and enjoyment and genuine, authentic happiness. Should be the happiest place on earth, more than Disney World. That's what I think. Because here the happiness is real. Here the happiness stays. And even though sad things come and we grieve and trauma comes and we get shocked, it comes back and it's consistent and it rises up and it wells up and it becomes stronger than it was before. That's what it is to become a part of the church. And so I ask that each and every person in here consider that if you are questioning whether any such version of a church can exist, join us and find out. Join us and find out. See if that might just be possible, and see if there isn't a version of your life that has peace and real joy in it. Jesus will take you on that path, and we want to go with you. So I'm going to pray for us all this morning, and I'm going to pray, you know, kind of a special prayer that kind of encompasses anybody that might be in any situation in this room. But after I'm done, I understand that there are many of you may actually want further prayer. You want to spend a little time and explain your situation, and that's really great. We actually have a prayer team that's going to be up front in the front corner here after service, and we invite anybody that would like prayer to come forward. Even if you don't even know what that looks like, just come. It'll be fine. It'll be chill. It'll be okay. Okay? So come on up afterwards. If that's you, and prayer team, come on up when you see that I'm done praying here. Lord, you have done the work to be able to offer us something that nothing else in the world can offer us. There is a joy that you said could not be taken from us. Nothing can be done to erase the joy that is available through what you have done. So we thank you, first of all. We thank you, God, that you would love us to such an extent that we would be a people, that we would be a race of people that was messed up, that was thoroughly, utterly messy, that we'd have our priorities all wrong, that we'd be ignoring you, that we would be doing all kinds of ungodly things, you name it, in the name of selfishness and the lack of love. And yet, you looked upon us and you said, those are people that can be redeemed. I will come down there and I will make sense of that. I will shed light on this situation and I will be light to this situation. We thank you that that is the kind of God that you are, Lord. And we look forward to the kind of peace a growing peace, more than we have now, about the future that we have with you, the satisfaction that can be had knowing that we're working together, the pieces are coming together, the people that you've put together are doing and working on a mission that you've given us, and we're being exactly what you meant us to be. We're on the trajectory that you always intended for us, Lord. That would give us such a sense of peace and contentment, Lord. I pray specifically for those this morning that are not content. And I have to believe in some way or another we all are tempted to be discontent. And I pray, Lord, that you would open up our minds and our hearts, shed some light on what it is that the cause of discontentment might be inside in each, every one of us, Lord, that we might consider what do you really think about our lack of peace? What do you really think about the thing that we want, the person we want, the money, the situation, the dynamic, the meal, the whatever it is, Lord, that you'd open our eyes and help us to consider with you and reason together with you what that motive is. Speak through your Holy Spirit, Lord. Bring things to our understanding that otherwise we could not understand through thinking and reasoning, Lord. And I pray, Lord, that in that process, that this would be the beginning for many people in here, the beginning of climbing out of a lifestyle of dissatisfaction, of restlessness, of anxiety, of discontentment, Lord. And that that would release us to experience the kind of joy that you spoke of when you looked down the barrel of that gun and you said, terrible things are about to happen. You will grieve, but you will have a joy that cannot be taken from you because of what is about to be done. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. If you haven't ever been to Regroup, Regroup is in full swing this Wednesday, 7 o'clock. I invite you out there. But otherwise, other groups will not be starting until September. We have one on Saturday mornings, I think, but the others have kind of taken a break for summer. Again, if you want prayer this morning, please come up to the front of the room. Mike and I and some other volunteers will be up there. Feel free to just join us and talk with us and just let us know about anything that you might wish was different. Amen.